Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Trace Kerr.
And I'm Amy Barton. And we had so much fun with our first animals episode that we are bringing you Animals Part 2. We'll probably have Animals Part 22 eventually. There is a lot out there in the animal kingdom that is so great. And so today we have everything you never knew you wanted to know about animals, Part 2.
My son's girlfriend, she's not an animal. Well, actually she is. My son's girlfriend likes to send me all of these fun things on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And she sent me this picture of a close-up of a woodpecker skull, like cut away, but with the drawing of a woodpecker over the top of it.
Okay.
And it looked like the woodpecker's tongue went from somewhere in one of its nostrils over the top of its head and then out its mouth. And I thought,
ooh.
No, that's completely crazy. And then I read this great article by Nicole Fisher in Forbes magazine. She started talking about they really do have this weird tongue. What I've always wondered is, you know, you see a woodpecker and they're whack, 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 whack on the side of a tree. And it's like, why don't they have
bird concussions?
Well, concussions or massive migraines all the time.
Yeah.
Because the average woodpecker hits a tree at 15 miles per hour, 20 times per second, 12,000 times a day.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so that...
Really?
And it's striking with 1,000 times the force of gravity. So that's like going from 26,000 miles per hour to a complete stop in a second.
Wow.
So how are your eyeballs not popping out of your head? Well,
yeah.
There are a lot of things that contribute to the woodpecker not needing a giant bottle of aspirin every day. One is a chisel-shaped beak, which slides into the bark nicely.
Okay.
As opposed to just whacking and stopping. So it kind of slides.
Okay.
It gives it a sliding stop.
That's another still one a real is, brisk stop.
I know, right? Another one is super strong neck muscles. And then this really cool thing, it's a phrase coined by Dr. Bales, chair of neurosurgery at North Shore University Health System. He says that woodpeckers don't get super big headaches because they have slosh mitigation.
There's so much good stuff in that sentence right there. Neurosurgery knows about the woodpeckers.
Yes.
And the phrase slosh mitigation.
Yes. So if you think of our brain and our head, it's like a yolk inside an egg. If you shake it really hard, that yolk is going to bounce off of all the sides. That's why we get terrible concussions and brain damage. A woodpecker's brain is tight in there, like your foot in a shoe if it fits really tight.
Okay.
And so when it's shaking around, that brain, even though it's going forward and backward and forward and backward, it's not banging on anything.
Okay.
And one of the things that helps relieve the pressure is that super long tongue. So they need the long tongue to get food. Because they're going to poke a hole and then they need to stick their tongue in to get fruit or insects. But what's really cool about their tongue is their hyoid bone is bigger than most other vertebrates. So
now
every vertebrate.
Hyoid's in the throat.
Yes. So every vertebrate has the hyoid bone.
Okay.
And it is a flexible bone covered in muscle that supports the tongue.
Okay.
Okay. And for most of us, that bone ends at the back of the throat. Your tongue's kind of attached to it and helps you move it around. For the woodpecker, the hyoid bone splits into two horns that come usually out of the right nostril.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
So much weirdness here.
It divides in two parts between the eyes, travels over the head. It almost looks like ram's horns. Okay.
Do you remember those old Oakleys that went from your eyes over the back of your head?
Yes.
Is that what we're kind of, that's part of it?
Well, like two tubes, like, and it goes, you know, between the eyes, over the head, and then they join together at the back of the tongue. And this helps the woodpecker do two things. It helps it store its super long tongue, because you have a really long tongue and you have a beak.
Oh, that's true.
Where are you going to stick it? Well, it's kind of like wrapped up over their head.
It's not spooling in like a tape measure.
Yep. And then when they, it is kind of over the top of their head. And then when they need it, they can stick it way out. And I have a short video on the website that shows just how long a woodpecker's tongue can get when they stick it out.
Yeah, look, would they trip on it?
They could. The tongue and the hyoid bone act as a seatbelt for the brain. The woodpecker's top beak is longer by just a little bit than the bottom beak. And so when they whack their head into something, the shockwave is transferred up the beak into that hyoid bone, and it distributes the force around the whole head.
That's an amazing design. Huh. Trace told me about this topic, and it's one before we recorded, and I know that she would not lie to me about something like this, but I just really had a hard time imagining it.
I did too. I did a lot of double checking. This was so one of those where I was like, I don't know if this mm-hmm. is, yeah, but it is.
That's why I was so quiet the whole time. There's lots of steam as I'm envisioning this.
This super woodpecker bone tongue brain seatbelt. I imagine that if we did have one of these, our football players would have less trouble. Yeah. With concussions.
Maybe we need to patent a new helmet design, although that won't stop the sloshing brain. We can discuss slosh mitigation as it relates to blue whales next, if you'd like. Pretty much anybody that knows me in person has heard my favorite blue whale fact, and I'm going to save it. I want to tell you, if you have a kid, if you watch PBS, you know that the blue whale is the largest mammal. It is anywhere from the size of 3 buses to a 747, a big giant plane. It's huge. It's hard for me to imagine what it would be like to be close to that. Very big. The size of the heart is about the size of a small car, like a Mini or a Fiat. A small kid could crawl through the veins of a blue whale. They're huge. Wow.
We've been to an aquarium exhibit where they had like a cutaway of a whale heart. Not yeah. a real one, but a plastic one, a
put
model.
Put a seat in there so you could
Well, and kids could walk through it mm-hmm. just to show them that very thing. And I can remember standing next to it going,
no way.
I'm seeing this, but I'm still having trouble.
You can imagine blue whale babies. Their gestation is 10 to 12 months. Ooh. And those babies are born at 20 to 25 feet. That is a big baby. But it's a big mama, too.
Well, yeah. So you got to think about that. I know I'm like, that would be awful. But as a giant whale, probably not. And they're live birth.
Yep. I would like to tell you my favorite blue whale fact now, but it may have been surpassed by what I'm about to share after. So my favorite and best blue whale fact is that the fart bubble of a blue whale is big enough for a horse to fit inside. Trace has heard this like 12 times.
You know, but it doesn't stop being funny.
I love it every time. Just the idea. Blue whale farts do smell. They are silent but deadly. Scientists hypothesize. Scientists don't really spend a lot of time with recording equipment in close proximity to do blue whale farts, but the water would muffle the sound. It would smell like krill. This is more than you ever wanted to know about blue whales.
This is a great topic for dinner table conversation, you know?
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You think this casserole smells bad.
You should smell a blue whale fart.
Yeah, and they're bigger than the kitchen table.
Mm-hmm. As long as we're talking about the elimination habits of blue whales, here's what I discovered in making sure I had my facts straight. I discovered a delightful new elimination fact, and that is that when blue whales go to dive, it's very energy intense, and so their body wants to get rid of anything that's going to be causing other functions in the body to be busy. So it wants to evacuate the bowels and the bladder. So there have been videos of blue whales at the surface of the water, and they roll over on their back and they create a nice pee geyser. That was my new favorite fun fact. It makes them seem enormous and whimsical.
It does seem very whimsical.
Yeah. I have a lot more blue whale facts, but we do have other exciting things to talk about.
Well, you were talking about researchers and the really bad smell mm-hmm. of a whale fart. I'm going to go and talk about a better smell.
Okay.
A smell we can't smell, but gypsy moths and moths in general are fans of this smell. Male moths and female moths have different antennas. That's how you can tell them apart. So your female okay. moth just has these really skinny, long antennas. And your male moth often has the most extravagant, feathery antenna. Because his whole job, once he hatches and becomes a moth and he's no longer a caterpillar, is to find himself a female moth. What he's trying to smell with that antenna are the pheromones of female moths.
Mm-hmm.
So pheromones are hormones that, we all put them out, but the female moth is putting this out as an attractant for the male moth, like
okay.
a trail of rose petals to the bedroom she's left out for him to find. Except the problem is that the rose petals, pheromones are really, really tiny.
Sure. Okay, it's so like a vapor in the air, right?
Yes. Yeah, so it's yeah. like a few hundred molecules in a piece of air about the size of a sugar cube. That's like trying to find the fruit fly sized love of your life floating yeah. around in a football stadium.
Oh, that's the saddest love story.
Right? It's so hard. So when yeah. they do find each other, it's just, it's lovely. It's beautiful. But okay, so date night is going to take a very dark turn because the bolus spider can exude pheromones that mimic female moth pheromones.
Oh, no.
And there's lots of different kinds of bolus spiders. Each spider has its own moth meal of choice, and so they only make that one pheromone.
Wow.
And they are orb weavers, but they don't weave a web. They dangle themselves off a leaf at night, and then they run out a long string of web, and they put a sticky glob on the end. In the videos, and we're going to post one of those, it almost looks like a raindrop. You know, it's just hanging off the bottom of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put out the pheromones, and the male moths are like, oh, she's so gorgeous, and flying along in the dark. And then the spider swings this piece of sticky stuff around on the end.
Oh, no.
And smack, hits that moth right out of the air. It sticks to the end. And then it's like a Craigslist date that went wrong.
Yes. I keep thinking of West Side Story. Like, this is a love from the wrong side of the tracks that also goes horribly wrong.
Oh, so wrong. Yeah. No, this isn't about parents not being involved, you know, not liking this. This is just really wrong.
This is why your parents tell you not to go out late at night alone.
Right?
Yeah.
You know?
Cautionary tale.
Call a friend. You know, they're always like, where are you going? Is someone's parent there? Well, the moth made no...
Oh, I have good news for the moth, though. One more for Team Moth. But it involves a symbiotic relationship between the moth and the sloth. And there are a couple kinds of sloths, but we're going to go three-toed sloths today. And you're going to find a trend in my facts today. They're very fecal in nature.
Your facts are always fecal in nature.
Pretty much. I try to tone it down for you guys because there's probably more that I'm going to leave out. The three-toed sloth lives the majority of its life in the tree. And by majority, I'm talking everything except for bathroom trips. And you're like, okay, well, that's two or three a day or like one a day. It is not. It is once a week, maybe.
Oh, man.
Uh-huh. They climb out of the tree maybe once a week, and they are slow like you see on the documentaries. And it's a lovely slow process, too. They climb out of the tree, and they do a little poop dance to make a little poop hole. And then they do their business, and then they do another little poop dance to cover their hole, and then they climb up the tree.
So I wonder if it's climb down slow and then wham, and then right back up the tree.
When you have a week's worth of waste product in your body, there's videos online. I confess I have not watched the video because I'm not, I would like to see their little dance, but I do not want to see the rest of that because one statistic that I got from sciencealert.com was that a sloth can lose up to a third of its body weight.
Holy cow.
So you physically can see a difference in the sloth when it climbs back up that tree. But there's also an if. It's if the sloth climbs back up the tree because a significant number of sloth deaths are during bathroom trips because it's a slow animal on the ground in the predator zone.
That seems rude. Don't you think? That seems rude.
You don't interrupt bathroom time.
You've got your smartphone. You're on your way to the bathroom and this ninja jumps out from behind the bed and aces you right there.
Right. When you've created this wonderful environment, you're ready. You're really ready. You've waited a week for this moment, and that's
gotta
how it's going to go.
I know, because it's got to be special. I mean, it's once a week.
Yeah.
Come on.
So you'd think there's a big reason why they come down out of the tree, because the majority of other animals live in trees, and anything that flies, just they're not coming down to use the bathroom. They let it go wherever they are. And so... even the other kinds of sloths, they just let it go in the trees. So researchers have hypothesized that it's because of the moths. And sloths have moths that live with them symbiotically. They live in their fur. They create this green algae that promotes a little bit more of a camouflage look for the sloths. So researchers have hypothesized that this is a win-win. The sloths get the camouflage from the moth's existence in their fur, and they don't bug them. And then the sloths come down out of the trees to this really rich environment that they've created with all their sloth poo right at the bottom of their tree. And the moths can make their nest. Other moths can find them because their smell is down there and their babies are there. So this is a good theory.
So then when the sloth is down doing its business, it might be picking up new mothlings that are going to come along with
it. It provides an opportunity for a love connection. It's great.
I think I like that better than the spider.
That's all we're going to give you this week, except for one last... one of my other favorite fun facts, and I have to tell you, this is also one of my favorites because, as you may have known by now, I work at a grade school, and I pull together anything that needs to go in morning announcements, and we went through a streak where we did fun facts couple years ago.
Those were fun. That was the highlight of my day when I was working in the library, was listening to you come up with your mantis shrimp. I think that was the first time you really came on my radar as like a person that I wanted to know, because it was all quiet.
You might be like-minded people.
Well, you're like, good morning. And then you talked about mantis shrimp and color and eyes and killing things, and I'm listening going, they're letting her say this, and I thought, God, I love her.
It's because the principal is busy, and the principal being busy, I'd hand her this stack of announcements. It's got the lunch menu, and we're going to make sure everybody knows it's early release Friday, and I give her a fun fact at the bottom of the pile, and she would not preview the pile.
Odds are, you're like, she's not going to look at the fun fact. Well, this definitely...
It became a game to see what I could get her to read. And still not get parent calls.
So we're going to call this the cockroach fun fact.
Here it is. A cockroach can live without its head. My original fact said for 9 days, but we found out it's more.
Yeah, Scientific American said that if the cockroach had a pretty good meal, it could last for weeks without its head. Because it breathes through its sides and it doesn't do blood the same way. And so it's just headless and wandering around.
And then if it lost a leg, do you think it would be looping?
Oh. Now we've gone from fun fact to animal cruelty.
We can edit that. It's fine.
We're totally going to take that. I'll laugh about it later. That'll be good. So if you're not stuck watching a headless cockroach, please come visit us at brainjunkpodcast.com. We'll have pictures and more notes for you, like the whale fountain and possibly some diagrams of the woodpecker head for this and other wonderful episodes. Look for Brain Junk wherever you find your podcasts, like iTunes and Google Play Store.
We tweet at @MyBrainJunk, and you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Brain Junk Podcast. Trace and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know, and I guarantee you will not be bored.